Welcome to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. Your host, Jen Narciso, interviews amazing guests each week to help you become educated, be inspired by other money stories, and stay motivated on your own wealth-building journey. No matter where you are financially, whether you're in debt or financially free, this podcast is for you. Now sit back and enjoy.
Welcome back to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. I'm your host, Jen Narciso. Happy Thursday, everyone. I am super excited to tell you that I booked the first part of our Hawaii trip. We're going to take the kids in February of 2023. We got a really good deal with, essentially, when we booked our Disney trip, I had to stay on extra to do a call with Hilton. And they gave us this whole spiel about their timeshare thing, and that gave us a free hotel for four nights in DC. And then that led to seven nights. Yeah, it's going to be seven nights. We're going to be able to stay in Hawaii in their condo. Again, as part of like the Hilton Grand Vacations. I do not recommend timeshares, but it's not a bad thing to just sit through a spiel and have them keep offering you incentives to try to do the timeshare as long as you don't actually take the timeshare. So anyway, we're going to be going to the main island. We get seven nights in a two-bedroom condo. I am pumped. We're going to also tack on Maui. So we're going to be super pumped. The kids are excited. And I'm going to be trying to travel hack our airfare, our Airbnb in Maui. So the condo on the Big Island, it was about $1,500 for seven nights, which is really a great price. Hawaii is super expensive. So I'm really trying to get everything else dirt cheap as much as possible. So I'm looking into all the credit cards to figure out how to do it. So I will definitely keep you posted, but stay tuned for that. Here's a mom tip. If you are thinking of travel before you spend a lot of money, definitely go to credit cards first. Knowing though, with a caveat that if you are in a ton of credit card debt, or if you can't pay your credit card bills on time, then this is not for you. But if you can, there's a lot of really cool perks and bonuses to figuring out how to travel hack. So I will go into more details on this on another episode. I'm still in the process of figuring it out myself, but when I do, I will let you know how we are going to hack Hawaii for cheap. But on today's episode, I have the pleasure of bringing on Melissa Houston. Melissa is a CPA and CFO. First of all, I feel very honored that she came on to share her story. It was really special because not many people would feel comfortable or feel confident in sharing this, but she essentially kept $100,000. She racked up $100,000 of consumer debt, and then she kept it from her husband. And so, yeah, it's just really, really cool story, and just really grateful that Melissa came on and openly shared this. Plus, she's also a Forbes writer. She works with tons of successful CEOs. She's a high, powerful businesswoman, you know, and even she got into $100,000 worth of debt. So I just want to let you know that even someone who has, quote unquote, tons of financial background or, you know, education, even she got $100,000 worth of debt. So if you're in any debt, there should be no shame, because she helps get rid of the shame and all of the negative things around debt and being in debt, because really getting into debt, anyone can do it. It's a mindset thing. And so I'm just so excited for her to come on, and all the things she's doing now are so amazing, and she's so inspiring and helping tons and tons of women, but I can go on and on. So without further ado, Melissa, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, Jen, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for this talk today.
Oh, yeah. No, my pleasure. This is going to be so much fun. I love all the work you're doing, and I think you're going to inspire a lot of moms today. And I shouldn't say moms, because I know a lot of my audience is not moms as well, but I know you're going to inspire a lot of people. So
awesome. That's what I like to hear.
Okay. So, well, Melissa, why don't we start with your money story? Because you had a lot of debt at one point.
I sure did. I mean, considering that I am a CPA, a finance professional, and I knew better, I still managed to get myself into a massive amount of debt. And just to give a little bit of a backstory, especially for the moms listening out there, because this is definitely, you know, it was part of my relationship. I hid a lot of my debt from my husband. So when we first married, that was, oh my gosh, almost 23 years ago now. When we first married, we were very much on the same page financially. So we had built our goal and our dreams together, and we were on a path to, you know, what we wanted to achieve. And about 6 years ago now, my plan got completely derailed and I started spending money. And, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, right? So at the time, I knew I was spending money and I should not be spending this money. And I just kept ignoring it and continued to spend and spend and spend. And I hid a lot of that debt from my husband because I knew that if he knew I was doing this, then he would, you know, put an end to my spending. So, I mean, things had definitely spiraled out of control. And within a year, I had managed to blow through $100,000 worth of credit.
Wow.
So this, yeah, this is a lot of money. It's not chump change. And, you know, when everything hit the fan and I got caught and I could no longer lie to him and had to come clean and let him know what was going on, the look of just pure disappointment on his face was like my rock bottom. I can still see that. I can still see his face when I think about this story. And I vowed to myself, I would never, ever put us in that situation again. And I also wanted to know why it was that I ignored my spending, why I allowed it to happen, especially being the finance professional that I am. I knew it was wrong. I knew I was putting a dent in our plans, our financial plans, and I knew it was wrong to hide it from my husband. So, you know, I think it took me about a year and a half of exploring this, right? So I thought, because on the surface, everything seemed fine, right? You know, I had a good job. I had a good marriage. You know, my kids are good, but something was going on, right? Yeah. And, you know, through the search, I thought, well, maybe it's my weight because that seemed very superficial. It seemed obvious. And as I started exploring, I ended up bumping into a coach. He was like, I'm taking this coaching program. I'm looking for clients to practice on. Would you be interested in joining? So I was like, sure, I've got nothing to lose. I might as well try this. And I'd never worked with a coach before. So what I found really interesting was how quickly we got to the root of the problem, right? And as we peeled back the layers, it did not take me long to figure out the reason why I was spending so much and why I had allowed myself to get in that situation was really because I was not happy in my career. And it wasn't surprising to me because I knew I had been repressing these feelings of wanting to go out on my own and be an entrepreneur and be my own boss. And, you know, like I'd been suppressing these feelings since I think 2004 in my career, right? So getting to the root of that problem was really, really interesting. And once I committed and said, you know what, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to live my life. I'm going to be true to who I am. It was like a switch was flipped.
Yeah.
I went into my business like 150%. And it really allowed me to truly find the happiness that I was looking for. Sounds cheesy.
No, but there's actually a lot I'd like to unpack here. First, kind of going back, what were you spending? I have to ask, like, what did you spend $100,000? Like, that's a lot of money, especially.
Right? It's a lot of money.
You know, it's not like you bought a house or, you know, things like that. Like, what kind of stuff were you even purchasing?
So it started off small where I would go away. My kids were getting older at this point, so I could go away for a weekend. And so the girls and I would go away and go on shopping sprees. And I, you know, drop $1,000. And then the next time, $2,000, you know, buying. I mean, we all know it's not hard to blow that kind of money. And I was like, you know, I deserve this. I deserve to buy the new shoes and the bags and the clothes and stuff. And then when, you know, I was home, I'd be like, oh, I really want something more. I need something more. Like I need to get, I don't know, whatever to match my outfit or whatever. And I'd start online shopping. And I did a lot of online shopping because I was so bored in my life, right? And so the packages would start coming in and I escalated. I went from wardrobe to deciding that my house needed to be redecorated. And then it got renovated. And then we installed an in-ground pool. And when we installed the in-ground pool, that was the deal breaker, right? Because by that point, I had pretty much maxed out all the credit that I could without my husband knowing about it. And I also remember standing there the day that they were filling the pool. And I was thinking, no, that's not what I'm missing. That wasn't it. And it's a terrible feeling to have, right? It's like to admit that to yourself. Yeah, it was very emotional.
Thank you. No, because I feel so many people get into debt, but there's so much, it's real. And you were living it. How did you hide it from your husband? And if you guys were on the same page, I guess, like, how did you hide it as a spousal standpoint, knowing it was wrong? And then how did you actually hide it so that if somebody is in a relationship that they could look for signs to know that they that something's off or something's really wrong and to really figure out how bad the situation really is?
Yeah, these are really good questions. And it was really easy for me to hide because he got complacent and lazy where he's like, okay, you're the CPA, you're the one who does the day-to-day finances. Like, that was my job in the family, right? And so he trusted me and he never had any reason not to trust me. So when the packages started coming in and he's like, what's going on here? This seems like you're spending a lot of money. I would get very manipulative, right? And I would be like, don't worry about it. It's fine. Don't worry about it. We can afford it. Don't worry about it. Just stop asking me questions. And then it got to the point where it's like, I make more money than you. Why are you asking me these questions? I deserve to buy whatever I want. Stuff like that, which, you know, I'm really ashamed about. It's not something to be proud of, but in true transparency, I got manipulative. And so he didn't know about $40,000 of the debt. So when we were putting the pool in, he thought we were debt-free. So that's where the trouble started, right? Because it's like we already had about $50,000 worth of debt. And then we're installing this pool. And if anybody's installed a pool, you know, it's not just the pool, it's the landscaping, the hardscaping, the, you know, interlock and stuff like that. You know, it's the pool equipment, it's the shed that you need, it's the redoing of the lawn, and it just snowballs, right? So, and it wasn't enough just to get a pool. We had to get a pool with a waterfall and a bigger pool and, you know, like just the stupidities of it all, right? Where I was like, no, we have to do this. Like, this is what I want. So there was a lot of manipulation there.
So let's say for somebody who's just starting out and starting to learn, that's why they're listening to the podcast, what signs can they look for to maybe know that something is even wrong? Are there signs?
I mean, there's definitely signs if you're looking at it practically, if, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff showing up and you're not sure how it was paid for. And, you know, you kind of know that you can't afford it. Like, that's kind of a red flag, right? You got to think about your gut feeling. And to prevent situations like that, I mean, it's not that I would recommend people just jump on their spouse and say, hey, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Start early, even if there's no signs. Make sure that you're communicating about money regularly. Make sure that you're not checking out and ensuring, like, you give control, full control to your spouse, because that's not fair either, right? Because you're expecting them to take care of everything without any input or, you know, what have you. So have that relationship where you're both meeting halfway. And you sit down and you talk about money, you have money dates, you do whatever you need to do to ensure that you are communicating about money, because, you know, money is one of the big stressors in marriage.
And so how did your husband finally find all this out?
Oh, that was an ugly little story. We had to go to the bank because I had run out of credit completely and I needed to move some money around and I couldn't do that because everything that we had was, you know, pretty much joint. I couldn't do it without his permission. So I, you know, kind of, you know, got into the bank and kind of said it was about the pool. And then he kind of found out there that it wasn't really about the pool. And so, yeah, that's the face of disappointment that I was facing that day.
And I have to imagine this put a strain on your marriage. How did you guys overcome this? How did you build back that trust?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really hard question, right? Because we had a really good, solid relationship up until that point. And, you know, he'd been with me for so many years that he knew that this really wasn't who I was. Like, he knows that I have, you know, financial goals that are important to me as well and stuff like that. So it took a lot of time for him to trust me again. He was very, very disappointed. I'm not going to understate that whatsoever. And rightfully so, if I put any money on the credit card, he wanted to know what was going on and what it was for. And I basically had to justify everything I bought to him, right? And as time went on and he realized that, or he just started getting more comfortable again, you know, realizing that, you know, we're back on track and we're, you know, getting to where we want to go and we've got goals that we're both trying to achieve and stuff, he feels more comfortable. But we were recently interviewed on CNBC and they had asked him that question as well. And he's like, I don't check out fully anymore. Like, I am there. I will never give her full trust again.
Yes, and I will put a link to that in the show notes as well. Yeah, no, because I'm thinking of my husband, and I'll be honest, I'm the money person. And mm-hmm. so he checks out a lot. And the more I'm thinking about it, it'd be so easy for me to just essentially do what you did, and he'd have no idea.
Exactly. So,
it has to be scary though, if you're on the other end though, because you, like you said, you trust someone for so long, and all of a sudden to find that out, especially when you have kids involved, it's like a whole other ball of wax thrown into it. Mm-hmm. You may not be able to answer this question, but I'm trying to think of someone who's in your husband's shoes. Of, do you know kind of how, I guess, he forgave you? Like, I know you said that it wasn't you, but did you go to any couples therapy, or did you go? And these are very personal questions, so you don't have to answer these.
Fine. I think they're really good questions.
So how did you start having, I guess, money dates more? How did you kind of really come together as a team to get out of this?
Yeah, so we definitely did go to couples therapy. He was not a fan of it. And so what we did was we just started talking more and more about money. I mean, there's really literally not a day that goes by where we don't talk about money at this point, right? Mm-hmm. So anything from, you know, what he's going to buy at the dollar store, which I honestly could care less about, to like what Amazon order is coming in, like it's, or what our future plans are, or, you know, do we have enough money in the kids' education fund? Are we saving for retirement? Do we have enough for that? You know, like, we're always talking about something that revolves around money on a daily basis.
And so you've got $100,000 of debt. That's not chump change. How mm-hmm. did you guys just do that? Even now, so we got through the emotional side, but yeah, how did you just actually logistically get out of $100,000 of debt?
Well, I mean, to be honest, we both make good money in our careers, right? And because we had been on such a strong financial track, getting that kind of debt and getting out of that kind of debt was a little bit easier than maybe somebody who was not making that much money. Right.
Okay.
So I don't want to make it sound like $100,000 was nothing to us, because it certainly was a lot. And in hindsight, and actually absolutely right now, we don't have any credit cards that go over $20,000. So first of all, we cut the access off to that excessive credit availability. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just being careful.
Yeah. Well, and so what does your husband do?
So my husband's an electrician.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a high paying job. Yeah, too.
Yeah. CPA. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, because we had, so we were able to move some money around and cover those credit card fees. Cause I mean, I was carrying, I'm going to guess about $30,000 on credit cards. And because I was so ashamed and I didn't want to know about it, I would carry that, and I would be paying hundreds of dollars in interest expense per month because I didn't want to come clean about what I'd done. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a lot of reshuffling, getting lower interest loans to cover the credit card payments and any other high interest loans that I had racked up, and then focusing on paying down that debt. Like, you know, there's a lot of deprivation in the sense like, okay, we're going to cut off, you know, like these things, you know, vacations, this, that, and the other,
yeah,
until we paid back that money and then got back on track.
So now you're thriving. You're in a phenomenal career. You love what you do. Well, why don't we talk? What are you doing now?
Yeah. So now I am a financial strategist for CEOs. And so what I do is I coach entrepreneurs on how to manage the money in their business and increase the profitability in their business so that they get to keep more money for themselves. So everything I do with entrepreneurs is about optimizing your financial strategy. And then I also offer fractional CFO services for larger businesses who want that done for you service. So, I mean, and you know, I have to say, sharing my story initially was so scary because I thought, what if people think I'm a total idiot and they don't even want to work with me because they don't trust me, right? But the opposite actually happened, where people are like, oh my God, you just make me feel normal, you know?
Yeah.
And I can relate. And I understand how the money is, it's about money, but it's so much more than money. There's so many emotions involved in it, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's got a money story. And, you know, I think it's one of the most emotionally charged topics. So when I do work with my entrepreneurs, we definitely talk about mindset as well, because the money mindset really creates a lot of good or bad financial habits.
No, I love it. I love that you humble yourself to acknowledge it, because I feel like there is so much shame around debt and money and talking about money. And that's why more and more people get into debt and are like, hide it from their spouses and hide it from themselves even. So just kudos to you for, first of all, thank you very much for sharing so openly of your story. I really appreciate it. And I think it's just amazing that you're just so open about it and that you're helping and inspire a lot of other people too who are in debt and then helping them now get on track. So.
Thank you. I appreciate that, because my mother is mortified.
No, I think it's real. It's what happens. And which is kind of what I'm really excited to talk to, dive into a little bit more now today on. I know you help a lot of business owners. And so I definitely want to talk about, for someone who is starting a business, but even for the moms out there who aren't business owner, I'd kind of like for you to talk a little bit about just how their household is a business. And to kind of reframe that mindset.
Exactly. It is such a business. So, you know, when you look at your business expenses and you look at your household budget, it can be very, very similar, right? So when you look at your profit and loss statement, it's very much like your household budget. So you know how much money you have coming in and you know how much money you have to work with. And the idea is always to spend less than what you're bringing in, whether it's a business or your household, right? And then your balance sheet in your business is very much like your personal net worth statement of your household. So if you're at all familiar with a balance sheet, that really shows you what the value of your business is, like what it's worth. So it's all your assets, less all your liabilities. And that's the equity that you have in your business. And the equity is what it's worth. And the same is said for household, right? Whether you've got a house or cars or whatever, you've got assets, and then less the liabilities, which would be a mortgage and any debt that you owe and stuff. And then what's left over, if it's positive, it's what you're worth, right? So what you're worth, meaning if you were to sell everything off, this is how much money you would be able to pocket from it. So if you have negative equity, that's a really bad sign. You definitely don't want to be in the negative. You always want to be in the positive when you're looking at your net worth. So if your balance sheet is positive, that's a really good thing. And you want it as high as possible. And if it's negative, then you definitely need to work on increasing the value of your assets, right? And then there's the cash flow. You have to manage the cash in your household, just like you have to manage the cash in your business. So a lot of the cash flow, if you're living under your means, you're going to have a positive cash flow, but sometimes timing differences happen where, let's say, I don't know, you've got a big insurance payment, maybe it costs you $2,000 a year to insure, you know, your house, your cars, whatever, and you pay it on an annual basis. So you've got this big bill coming in, let's say it's coming up in April, and you're looking at your cash to make sure that you've got enough cash to cover that expense. Right? So if you don't have the cash, then you have to ensure that you've got plan B to cover that bill coming in. So it's the same with business. That's how it works, where, you know, and we always hear cash is king, but I like to say we hear cash is queen. And, you know, cash is what keeps everything going, because if you run out of cash, whether it's in your business or your personal finances, then you're not able to meet your bills. And that's how bankruptcy happens. So having a well-managed household or business prevents you from going bankrupt.
So let's say for somebody who's just starting out, they've come to like, oh my God, I need to like figure out my money.
Yeah.
What is the first thing they should do?
Make a budget. Right? So know how much money you've got coming in and know how much money that leaves you to spend with, right? So if you're first starting out, chances are your salary is going to be lower. And like, are we talking about a business or a personal
I feel like it's kind of the same in a way.
Yeah. So you, well, for business, you know, your revenue may be a little uncertain at the beginning, but if you're an employee, you know how much salary you have coming in.
That's true. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So then I would say if you're looking at it from like a household perspective and you're an employee, make sure that your household expenses, like your mortgage or your rent, your utilities, if you have children, all those expenses, you know, internet, cable, any sort of expense that you need to live off, food, make sure that everything you're spending in a month is less than how much money you're bringing in. And then for businesses, it gets a little trickier because startup is more difficult to get the revenue in the door right away. But really, the number one thing you should do is you should be focusing on getting that money in the door. So making those sales. So if you've got your offer out there, there's so many shiny objects online where they're like, if you're running a business, you need to, you know, learn my copywriting method or my messaging method or my program or this or that. And what you really need to do is get the money in the door.
Yeah. What do you recommend business owners do when they're starting up?
If you have to bootstrap it, read books. So there's tons of books out there. There's tons of people you can follow on social media for free and learn, like if you're struggling with selling, learn sales methods. First thing you should do, because cash is queen. You need that cash coming in the door. You need that cash so you can cover your personal expenses so you can live, and you need to bring more cash in so you can reinvest it into your business, right? So I know that Pitch Anything is a fantastic book for people who are, you know, struggling with sales and need to understand, you know, better ways of selling. I can't think of anything right off the top of my head other than Pitch Anything, but there's definitely tons of podcasts out there about sales, tons of books, tons of free material, and just educate yourself.
So I'd like to pivot a little bit now into the business side of things. And so for someone who, like for me, I'm a real estate agent. So starting up, what would you recommend for someone who doesn't know exactly the income coming in? How do they, I guess, get a hold of their business? And besides books, like you just talked about, where else should they be putting their money or focusing their efforts?
Yeah. So really, focus, like once you've got money coming in, focus on how to manage your money, right? Mm-hmm. Focus on the real things that traditional business owners do, because traditional business owners are not going out there and finding every course they can on self-improvement and all that stuff, right? They're bootstrapping. They're, you know, making sure that they're getting their business going on a very tight budget. So whatever you can't learn for free, you need to learn from somebody who is a business-minded coach who's going to teach you the ropes, right? And I always say to people, sales is first, second is managing your money. Because the way you get wealthy, first of all, is bringing in your money. And secondly, it's proper money management. Because what happens is a lot of people just spend for the sake of spending, and they're not understanding where they're putting their money, right? And people who are building wealth can easily build wealth through their business and reinvest their profits that they're making into some things that are going to help accelerate their sales. But when your sales get higher, so do your expenses, right? So it's very strategic having that financial plan, taking a financial plan for your business and projecting the next 12 months, figuring out where you are and where you want to be is an excellent way to give you a roadmap. Because what a financial plan does is it breaks down month by month how many sales you need to get in order to break even, and how many sales you need to get to achieve your best situation, right? So it's obviously above break even, what would make you really happy, how much you can reinvest into the business, stuff like that. And then each month you have gradual growth. And as you grow, you ensure that your profit margins are staying tight so that you still get that profit to reinvest back into the business. And then eventually you'll get to a place where you're comfortable in your business and you can start thinking, you know, outside the box, like how you're, like what your next move is going to be, or if you're satisfied with where you are in life, how you build your net worth, your personal net worth. There's so many things you can do once you've got the money coming in. But if you're starting a business and you're struggling and you're not getting those sales in, that's the priority.
Which makes 100% sense. I was going to kind of leads right into my next question. For someone who is really struggling to get money in, how much time do you typically advise someone when they're starting a business? Because some businesses take time to get off the ground. I also know it takes, depends on how much the person's willing to put in. But at what point do you tell someone, okay, like you really need, something's off, or you need to either stop what you're doing, or you need to figure something out, but this is not sustainable, or that you can't keep doing this?
It entirely depends on every individual situation, right? Yeah. There's no one answer. If you're a product-based business, you're going to have more of cash outlay at the beginning because you have to create your products. If you're a service-based business, you can just start selling right away, right? So every answer is just going to be completely dependent on what it is they're offering, how long they've been offering it. I mean, if you're, you know, if you've got your products on the market, or if you've got your services on the market and, you know, they're not selling, then you need to start tweaking your marketing message. You need to start tweaking, you know, just different ways, trying different things to get the attention of the consumer, so they'll come see you and want to buy from you. Because, you know, everybody talks about know, like, and trust. People need to know, like, and trust you before they buy from you. So it's very much getting yourself out there and making yourself very visible.
And I know a lot of people recommend selling first, even before you get the website and before you get, you know, all the other stuff. I know when I was even starting Investor Mama, though, part of me wanted the website and all the things first because I wanted it to look professional, that once they got, they could see me and then know that I am legitimate and not just some random person trying to sell, or like even provide content that they know it would be valuable content and not sloppy or messy. So how do you balance that?
Well, I can use a perfect example from my own situation where I started the fractional CFO service back in the fall. And I built the website myself, and it was totally, in my opinion, completely amateur, but it served its purpose. It put my name out there, what my services were, and how they could contact me. And then once I started getting clients, I went to the professional to get the website designed.
And you were still able to get clients and everything still?
Absolutely, because, you know, I put myself out there. I'm a CPA. I marketed myself and, you know, chose a message that was going to resonate with people. It did not take off immediately. It took a few months to start generating interest. So it's hanging in there, being consistent, you know, just following that method of, you know, getting yourself visible and be resilient, not give up. And if something's not working, you tweak the message a bit and see what resonates with people.
That's great. Thanks. And do you have any tips or strategies for someone just to help get their name out there to promote themselves more?
I'm a big fan of getting yourself out there through publicity. I think that's a really great way. So social media management and publicity are really key. Social media management is basically free if you're doing it yourself. You know, like you don't need to pay to use any platforms. And then publicity, if you do it yourself, it's free, right? So if you start pitching other publications so that other publications start giving you visibility, or you go on other podcasts, or you get TV appearances, what have you, all this stuff is free, right? Publications, TV, they don't charge you to come on their platform. What costs money is if you hire a PR agent to do it for you.
Yeah.
So when you learn how to do it yourself, you can do it for free. So those are two really great ways of getting visible out there. You know, like you go on your social media accounts and do live streaming. You can find people to collaborate with so you can reach other people through their audience and stuff. There's so many different ways that you can leverage free activities to get visibility.
So I'd love for you to share on how you got on CNBC. Did you do that yourself, or did you have, because I know you're further along now in your journey, did you have a publicist that did it for you, or did you work that? Or
no, I personally will never pay for a publicist. So it's actually quite funny. So have you ever heard of Harrow, Help a Reporter Out?
No.
Okay, so there's this email thing you can sign up for. So Help a Reporter Out, I can't remember if it's .com, .net, whatever, but look it up. Google Help a Reporter Out and it'll take you there. And they send out 3 emails per day where journalists are looking for sources, right? So they may have a story that they're running and need some expert opinion, whatever, and you can respond and then you get some visibility through that way, right? So I don't know. I think I did this maybe in the summer. I cannot even remember when I did this, but Shonda Land, there was a journalist who was looking for a story about financial infidelity on Shonda Land. So I'm like, oh, well, gee, that fits. So I responded and she interviewed me. And so she put a post out there about my story and that was that. But then just before Christmas, CNBC reached out and they're like, are you the same Melissa Houston that was in Shondaland and talked about financial infidelity? And I was like, yeah, I am. And they're like, would you mind talking to us for a minute? So that's how it happened. And it just kind of, they interviewed me and then they're like, you know what? We're going to send a camera crew to your house. Is that okay? And I was like, okay. I was more worried about how my house looked. But yeah, so, I mean, it was an amazing experience and I didn't pay a dime for that.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. It's so easy for anyone to do.
So you just never know where the opportunities are going to lie. But the more visible you get, the more other people are going to see you. And they're going to be like, wow, that's a great story. Can I interview you? And I got the BBC contacted me. What was it, last week or the week before? And they did an interview with me as well. So it's like, but I also write for Forbes too. So like, I kind of know how this works, but I pitched Forbes, I cold pitched them and I got my own column. So, I mean, these things are entirely possible.
I love it. Now, for somebody who wants to pitch one of these big companies, do you have any tips or maybe not anything, nothing specific, but even just general of how someone can go about connecting with them or reaching out to them?
The biggest tip I can give you is have a really good headline, right? If you're going to send an email, make sure that you've got what they call the hook. So your headline, your email header has to be interesting enough for somebody to open your email. Because the thing is, contributors, reporters, journalists, we get bombarded with pitches. So you have to find something that's going to stand out. And if, like, you know, some I can just tell from the headline, I'm not interested. And we can't respond to everyone who pitches us. So don't get offended when you don't get a response. It just means a not now. Like, this just didn't jive. But when I get a really good headline, I'll open the email. And then if they give me points on why their story would be interesting, to me, that works really, really well, because then I'm like, huh, that does interest me. I think I'm going to respond to them.
Thank you. This is so helpful, especially for somebody who wants to get going in business, but doesn't have necessarily the resources or the access or even the time if they have kids running around, but they can still do it.
Exactly.
And get going. And you're living proof of that.
And you don't need, and I'm not living proof for this because I fell into the, you know, like, I'm going to get my expensive coaches and they're going to tell me the exact formula I need in order to make my business take off right from the get-go. And that never happened, right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you don't need all the expensive coaches or programs or anything like that. If you put in a little sweat equity, you can look this stuff up on the internet and learn so much on your own and save yourself thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, Melissa, this has been an amazing conversation. Is there any last minute things that you'd want to leave my audience before we jump into our lightning round?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing that I would want people to take away from listening to this is to really pay attention to how you manage the money in your business and your personal finances, right? Because it's not how much money you make that makes you wealthy. It's how you manage it. That's really the key ingredient. So, you know, ensure that if you're starting a business or if you're starting, you know, if you're budgeting for your household, what have you, ensure that you're living within your means.
I love it. This is awesome. All right, Melissa. Well, at this point in the show, I'd love to jump into our lightning round. This is where I ask my guests the same four questions each week. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I have not studied. I don't know. I'm getting a little nervous.
No, they're fun. What is one fun fact about you that not many people know?
Fun fact, I'm a social worker.
Ah.
So my first career was in social work.
Mine was a nonprofit.
Nice.
You Where'd you work?
I worked, I'm not going to get into a long story here, but I worked in group homes.
Okay.
And in classrooms.
Very cool. And now you pivoted. I feel like a lot of social workers is unfortunately just don't get paid a lot and work so hard.
It's high burnout too. Yeah. High burnout, especially if you want to have your own family. Yeah. So that's why I pivoted.
Which makes sense. Okay. Well, Question number two is, who inspires you the most and why?
You know, ironically enough, it was my father that inspired me the most. I'm no different than any other kid out there who had a very turbulent relationship with my dad when I was a teenager, but he instilled in me the confidence to go after what I wanted. And even though I, you know, on the outside, he looked like the biggest redneck, he actually was the first feminist that I was ever exposed to, because my dad always encouraged me regardless. Like, it was never an issue about whether I was a girl or not. It was like, you're my daughter and you can do this. So he was a big inspiration.
I love that. I love that. Does he know that? Were you able to tell him?
Yeah, he knows that. And he knows that when my book gets published, it's dedicated to him.
Ah, very nice. That's awesome.
He's turned into a real softy now.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Well, daddy's little girl.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, question number three is, what books are you reading now or that you have read and you loved and recommend?
Oh my God. You know what? I am constantly reading books. And what have I read lately that I really liked? That's such a stumper right now. I was listening to Brené Brown. I cannot remember the name of the book. She's very inspirational. And I was listening to Susie Orman, Women and Money.
Okay.
And the reason I'm listening is because I don't have, like, by the end of the day, I'm so tired. I don't have the capacity to read. I have to just lie there with my eyes closed and listen.
That's great. I'll put links to those in the show notes though as well.
Okay.
All right. Well, the last question is, what is one actionable tip or piece of advice that you can tell our moms out there to help them on their financial independence journey?
If you're looking for financial independence and you have no idea where to start, my ultimate most favorite book out there is called The Wealthy Barber. And it is, it's by a Canadian. It was super popular in Canada. And he wrote it about, 30 years ago now. But it was written so well that at the age of 19, when I read it, I totally understood it, right? And even though it's Canadian, it's pretty much interchangeable. And the advice that he gives on how to save money, how to put money away, how to save for your kids' education, how to save for this, that, and you're like, just having the goals and the advice and the life insurance and having that fulsome financial plan that you need as an adult, it's priceless. So the book is still being published. It's definitely a classic. And on every podcast question, I always go back to The Wealthy Barber, because that definitely shaped my financial, the way I think about finances as well. My dad actually gave me that book.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, I know the classic is usually Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that kind of wake people up to like, there's another way. And I love that book. The only thing, I guess, is that it doesn't tell you, okay, so then what? Like, your mind's blown, but then like, what do you do? You now know this. So what do you do when you have this like epiphany of the rat race, the 9-to-5 job just isn't the way to go necessarily, and there's better ways and you should prepare and all that stuff?
Yeah, exactly. So my new book will cover that.
Yes, I love it.
And also The Wealthy Barber is a good one for personal finance.
Yeah, I'm so excited for your book to come out.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited too. So I'll definitely be knocking on your door and let you know when it's going.
Yes. Yes, please do. Please do. And I'm still in the works, but we're going to start doing Instagram lives so that listeners can ask guest questions directly and have more of a fun, engaging interaction. So definitely when your book comes out, that'll be a great.
Oh yeah. That'd be awesome.
That'll be fun. A lot of fun to do. So
yeah.
Well, Melissa, this has been awesome. How can my listeners connect with you further?
Yeah, thank you so much. The best way to find me is on my website at melissahoustoncpa.com. And if you are a new business owner or thinking of going into business, you can go and download the 5-step roadmap to biz finance freedom. It's free and it shows you what you need to understand about your business finances at a high level. I don't teach people how to be accountants, but I teach them how to manage the money in their business. And it's super valuable to get that five-step framework. And if you're on LinkedIn or Instagram, you can follow me at Melissa Houston CPA.
Amazing. And I'll put links to all this in the show notes.
Thank you.
Well, Melissa, thank you again. It's been really fun. And again, thank you so much for being so open and transparent with your story.
Oh, thank you so much for asking me to share.
All right, Melissa, have a good one.
Bye.
All righty, that wraps up another amazing episode of the Investor Mama podcast. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you found Melissa's story inspiring, helpful, all of the above. Again, I'm just so grateful she came on and so openly shared. It was really, really cool of her. And so if you did like today's content along with my other episodes, please subscribe on the platform that you are listening to. And feel free to leave a rating and written review. And if you do, just shoot me a screenshot and I'd be happy to send you a free Investor Mama calculator. So definitely go on and do that. And if you did benefit and think somebody else would benefit from today's episode or any of my other ones, definitely feel free to share on social or with, you know, anyone you know. I'm definitely trying to grow the Investor Mama tribe and all help is beneficial. And so definitely would be awesome if you wouldn't mind doing that. And also feel free to reach out. Let me know what you're liking about the episodes. If there's anything else you'd want to hear more about or learn more about, I definitely would love to hear from you. You can go to investormama.com/connect. So, all right. Well, this is Investor Mama. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Investor Mama podcast. If you like today's episode, please support us by clicking subscribe on the platform you are currently listening to, leaving a comment or awesome review, and spreading the wealth and sharing this podcast with friends and family or on social media. Don't forget to check out investormama.com to connect with our community and sign up for our email. Stay tuned for next week's episode.